It's a new day, and welcome to I Am Talkcast. My name is Brahim Mustafa, a public speaking coach right here from Ghana. And today, we have a great personality. And she is someone you will love to hear from. She's someone who is an inspiration to the world. And going through her profile today, since yesterday, I couldn't sleep because I've been seeing information, tons of all the great work she has done. She's a change activator. She's a serial entrepreneur, strategy consultant, author, speaker, and board advisor. She's also a poet, and she has youth development in her heart. She's also in love with technology and how she can be able to use technology to help people. She's done this for quite a long time. I cannot mention all the great innovations and businesses she has founded. Today, let's welcome Hanai on stage. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. Thank you for this warm introduction. Great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you have done a lot of things, and you are an inspiration, just like I told you backstage. We want to hear from you. What is the story? What inspires you, and why have you taken time out of your schedule to do all these amazing things?
Thank you for this question. Well, Ibrahim, like I told you, you caught me right after landing in Dubai. I'm here for COP28. And maybe I'll start from there, and just to kind of come back to what inspired me, what drives me, and where I stand in terms of how I want to contribute to change in the world. So I'm here in Dubai for participating in events related to COP28 in the capacity of lead for operations for the Sovereign Nature Initiative, which is one of the startups I work with at the moment, who's doing amazing things in terms of bridging conservation organizations with Web3, trying to bring sustainable funding for the preservation of biodiversity across the globe. But I'm also here in the capacity of a recently published author. I published the book Being Other, celebrating the beauty and power of being an outsider, and it's very much kind of the story of my evolution in the space of tech and sustainability, and my understanding of where Black, Indigenous, and women of color stand in terms of their capacity to bring forth change. So I'll be giving a book talk, a workshop here based on that book. And in this book, I talk about how what drives me, what was my inspiration at the start. I feel like, you know, like a lot of young Africans, I grew up in Morocco. Thankfully, with a lot of gratitude to my parents, had access to quality education, had the possibility to live abroad, had earned it as well because I earned a scholarship for excellence and so on. So education was very prime to me. And it's been a place where I could understand the possibilities and the responsibility that is upon us when we have access to it. Because again, growing up in Morocco, I could see that not every young person had access to quality education, especially for girls. And so, you know, like growing up and facing sometimes personal challenges, because as much as I came from a family that was very loving and caring and was giving me tools for the future, we also came across a number of challenges which opened my mind and my consciousness to notions around healing and contribution and legacy and what is it that drives me on an everyday basis. And I think for me, very early on, I understood that I had to be an agent for change when it comes to equality and justice. And it has many aspects to it. It has the gender aspect to it. I grew up in a country that is a Muslim country. There are specific structures to it, as in women and men are not fully equal in front of the law, and certainly not culturally speaking. There's a number of responsibilities that land upon women, and sometimes they're being constrained, and that's an issue for everyone because they're not able of fully expressing what their soul is about, what their purpose is about, and their talents. And so that definitely was something that triggered me. But instead of just being triggered, I also used it as a fuel to imagine possibilities. And so I studied many different things. I studied, I wanted to be equipped essentially to be an agent for change. So I studied, I did multiple dual degrees, a bachelor's degree, master's degree, public management, corporate management, and so on. I also studied subjects that were more scientific in order to eventually land where I'm landing now, as in coming to have substantial discussions on what is it, what synergies, what collaborations can we seek to answer the topic of climate change. Because for us as Africans, it's key. It's especially for women and girls, we eventually pay the cost of all the decisions and the poor decision-making that has been there for decades, because we're the most vulnerable population and we don't have a seat at the table. So right now, today, for me, I feel like it's extremely important to show up and display all my capacity, learnings, wisdom, to be able to represent effectively and hopefully make a change. Now, like I said, throughout my career, yes, I had the chance to work for corporates, but I think what drove me very much was to become a social entrepreneur and deciding to do so as a repatriate entrepreneur. So I came back to Morocco in 2017. I set up a boot camp and a coding school. I also set up a nonprofit to bring tech education to rural areas. And from there, I took part in many Pan-African initiatives and kind of like realized that there was something going on beautiful that I had to be part of at the Pan-African level, whereby young entrepreneurs wanted to push the needle to change the structure of how they could bring a change. So pushing for the adoption of startup acts and so on. And eventually, I was approached to take on the role of advisor for startups and innovation at Smart Africa. And I moved to Kigali and I lived in East Africa for a little bit. And then from there, I also returned to entrepreneurship. And now I manage the combination of all of those things, like you said beautifully. So I work with startups, I advise some other entities, and then what I do with my book and with my book tour right now, which also led me to Accra, by the way, I was there not so long ago, is this creating a platform for sharing knowledge and tools and possibilities for people that are activated to come together and bring forth a lot more change.
Wow, wow, that's wonderful. And I can tell you for a fact that she's an institution on her own. And she's not waiting for the seat to be created for her. She is creating her own seat. And she is creating her own seat at her own table, making sure that possibilities are rich. Let's talk a bit about the events you came for in Accra. I did all the research and that was the Executive Women Network event. How was the feeling? And there were a lot of young women, great women doing great things. And what were some of the highlights?
It was extraordinary. Like to this day, it brings tears to my eyes to think about the fabulous moments that we have. I was invited there thanks to a connection with my former colleague from Smart Africa, Talma Kway, who connected me with the EWN network. And I came as a speaker to talk about inclusive technology. I was part of this panel where the network had other guests from other countries, and they told us it was kind of a first because they wanted to become more and more Pan-African. Now, in the audience, we had 450 women, and all of them, you know, with this drive, this aspiration, many of them entrepreneurs, and some of them with those aspirations, some of them had, you know, have corporate careers, but all of them came with such a beautiful mindset of collaboration, of cheering upon one another. I wrote a post about it. I said how powerful that is when women of color come together, because truly it was about you know, getting to know one another on all levels, celebrating the wins, soothing one another, healing one another. And then eventually in the follow-up, because I followed up with a few, we're opening doors to one another. And so I was delighted. I felt like it was a model of an experience, of a conference, extremely well executed by the team as well. And I'm very, very grateful. And I do believe that such communities are very much the driver because they inspire, they connect, they talk about the topics truthfully, authentically. We talked about, you know, challenges of patriarchy and how do we also get men into becoming allies and transforming our roles and transforming the way African women show up. It was beautiful. I have the fondest memories of this time.
Wow, that's wonderful. And you are creating change. And I love what, there's a quote I love. It says that you should plant seeds and whose shade you don't even intend to sit. So when you plant the trees, you don't even know whether you sit under their shades or not. But she is doing exactly that, giving hope, giving inspiration, making sure that that young woman or young boy or that young African who feels like I need to move out, I need to do this, it's possible. You can do it. So let's talk a bit about, we'll talk about your book exclusively. I want you to talk about your book exclusively and what you see. But then let's focus on COP 28. And there was an event in Accra whereby Al Gore was here in Accra. It was last 2 weeks. And we talk exclusively about climate change and how it is affecting the environment and what African leaders or young people across Africa need to do. What is the expectation for COP 28?
I think the expectations are very strong for COP 28 for a number of reasons. First of all, because it is set in a country that gives the image of not being quite sustainable. You know, you come to Dubai, everything works perfectly and so on, but they built their wealth on fossil fuels. And there was a controversy recently. I even took part in a panel or in a gathering, let's say, with She Changes Climate, where they invited the president of COP 28. And he was challenged by Mary Robinson from Project Dandelion at the end of the discussion on whether he would be using COP as a platform to also seal deals for fossil fuels. So I think we're coming at a time where people are not reluctant to tell truths. But it's also, for me, that what I took away from that conversation was that we need to hold people accountable. We cannot play anymore with climate action. We have, you know, people said by 2030, we need to make sure that we're under 1.5 degrees above the pre-industrial age. And we're very fragile with this target at this point. And so it's very limited time that we have. So holding people accountable is absolutely key. And who does this best? Civil society and young people. So that's why, you know, I'm really delighted. I'm part of so many networks, so many communities, and I see a lot of young people from across the globe, and particularly Global South, Brazil, Mexico, Peru, but also Africa, of course, that are showing up and telling their truths to leaders, women as well. And so I come here at COP. I will be speaking at a number of events, like, for instance, this Green Blockchain Conference that I'm going to present what we do at the Sovereign Nature Initiative. Because once again, the blockchain space, which is very promising and has been there for about 10, 15 years, has now reached a level of maturity where it's about, you know, like it's moving millions and billions of resources. And so if we channel those resources right, and the blockchain space has an additional interest for me, it's because of transparency, governance, then it's possible that we create something really, really meaningful. So I'll be speaking at that event and then partaking in a number of other dinners, conferences, where I will see who among the UN officials and other IMF officials and all the big institutions, but also corporates, philanthropists and so on, are coming together to bring forth change. And I think as much as there is a lot of expectation on this COP, you know, I landed at night, so I was not here yesterday, but I read the news and the headlines, and you already have a number of pledges that put into action what has been said at the previous COP. So for instance, Germany has pledged $100 million for the loss and damages fund, which is absolutely key for populations that are affected by climate change, including populations in Ghana. You know, I reached out to, she reached out to me following the EWN conference, one of the organizers that was particularly touched by the words that I said on ecofeminism and how women in Africa need to call for being part of the decision making, being part of, having a seat at the table, because they will pay the consequences. So they need to partake in the decision.
Great.
We're all about the current status of climate change and how marginalized communities in Ghana are paying the price. And what can we do today to alleviate that? So I feel like there's a number of projects that may be supported by this fund that's going to be put in place. The UK also pledged, the UAE also pledged, and I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Right, so we have Anai, and she is an inspiration to watch, and she is going to be part of COP28, and we have a lot of expectations, and we know that it's always going to be possible. This is the talk. I am Talkcast, and if you are here, whatever you are, I just want you to know that it's possible. We can make a difference, and together we can create a leverage on technology, inspiration, and giving hope to the hopeless. So it's 360 inspiration. I know that together it's always going to be possible. Together it's always going to... Welcome back. And it went off. And talking about the next chapter, we talk about technology in Africa. And these are some of the challenges that we experience. Like, it's something that is usual to us. When I was in New York and I'm doing like interviews, Zoom trainings, I do Zoom training for corporate organizations, it always goes smoothly. When I'm in Ghana, I get hiccups like this. What do you think we can do to be able to overcome some of these challenges?
Are you talking about infrastructure and technology there, like connectivity, or are you talking about some other hiccups when it comes to the culture of collaboration?
I'm talking about connectivity for now and some of the challenges. Then we'll go back to the expectation, which you didn't finish on, and we had challenges like this.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I would say, yes, I think... professionals in Africa, young people in particular, especially those that are in tech and entrepreneurs, do face a number of challenges that are tied to the infrastructure. And so, for instance, actually, very few countries in Africa offer 5G at this point. When they do, it's not across the country. I was in South Africa for 3 weeks. And they deal with the challenges with load shedding. And so electricity would go off a few times in the day. It makes it super difficult to plan ahead. And, you know, like you have to be on your application. The status can change. So even if you know the day before that you're going to have this 2 hours, actually can go up for 4 hours or 8 hours. And so for innovators, it's a nightmare, really. And so I think this is also a place where we need to hold our decision makers accountable, because most of the time it has to do with the lack of maintenance. It has to do with the corruption, let's be honest. Or let's call the problem how let's call it out, you know. We cannot expect entrepreneurs to be playing the role of everything else. Everyone needs to play at their best capacity at this point, so that innovators can focus on innovation and civil society can focus on, you know, bringing communities together and so on. And everyone needs to really play their best. And and perhaps, you know, I think just coming back to my question about whether you were talking about connectivity or not, because this is tied. Actually, I do find a lot of hope in the continent when I am part of these Pan-African initiatives with these conferences and so on. A lot of warmth, a lot of you know, coming together and a renewed sense of identity, really. People are now really proud to claim they're Africans and the future is Africa and so on. But we also have to deal with the legacy of having some mistrust vis-a-vis institutions and vis-a-vis yeah. one another, and only trusting those that are part of our tribe. And that has to do also with infrastructure in a way, because if you're being constantly reminded of the lack of possibility to just rely that on the fact that everything else is going to work and you just have to do your best, then you're obviously going to come back to this by default fear and not engaging in the most collaborative manner. I do think there is a cultural change that's happening, but we need to work a lot more on it so that there's a lot more transparency and there's a lot more accountability and there's a lot more promoting talent, really, and not just promoting those that belong here and there, nepotism, for instance, which is plaguing the continent and really keeping people behind at this point.
Wow, that's wonderful. The next question is, you've come across the whole globe. You've seen innovations, you've seen technology, you've seen infrastructure, you've seen inspiration, like people who inspire others. And what do you think that young people in Africa can also do to step up in creating that seed that you are talking about?
Absolutely. So I've seen a lot, but I haven't seen it all. And I'm just constantly, feeding my appetite, my curiosity. And I think this is one of the key messages here. Keep being curious. You know, we live in a time where, thanks to technology, we can have access to so much knowledge. You know, our parents did not have the possibility to get a training at Harvard online. They had to apply, make sure that they could have a visa, go all the way up to the US and so on. Now you have the best universities in the world that are at your fingertip. You can use AI, you can use ChatGPT, you can use so many other tools that are there to do your job, to get informed, to get upskilled and so on. So, you know, remain curious and identify any need that you may have and go seek the knowledge from the source if possible and online, and also apply your critical thinking, because that's the other challenge sometimes when you have a population that did not have access to quality education and then they're confronted with a much more advanced technology. Whenever I saw some of the developments of AI, I was thinking, but people will be manipulated when they will see a video of a fake, this or that person saying this or that. And God knows it has an impact on their ability to choose the right leader and in elections and so on. So I think it's important to get constantly informed and cross-check the information. But you do have a lot of entities that are offering those trainings as well. So be curious, upskill yourself constantly, and then be proud, because we have so much to offer. The world is waiting for us to share our wisdom that we've inherited from so many generations before us. You know, I think again, we have to deal with the legacy of decolonizing our mindset and our education and the way we perceive our own selves and our own strengths and our own wealth. And so being in this position where you're able to rewrite your narrative and share this knowledge with the world is extremely powerful. And with that, be entrepreneurial. I mean, we have sometimes no choice but to be entrepreneurial, but it's also a muscle that you build, and then the more you're gonna create projects, create innovation, and sometimes it fails, but it's okay. It's not the end of the world. It's just that with some of our circumstances in Africa, it can be difficult. However, I believe in persistence, and I believe that talent will get recognized at some point because there's a lot more influx of money. There's a lot more interest from investors. There's a lot more support from mentors. And so it is the moment to seize these opportunities and show up, really.
Great. Show up. Seize opportunities. Create opportunities and do what you can do. But above all, be consistent. Let's talk about your book, because this is something that even for this generation, next generations to come, they are still going to benefit from this book. So maybe you can talk about the book and the way forward.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to share that just a few weeks ago, I published Being Other. The desire to write this book comes from a long time ago. I mean, as a kid, as a child, I wanted to become an author. At some point, I was, looking at my mom, who was a French literature professor. She inspired in me. She instilled in me this desire. I was writing stories as a kid. And then eventually, whenever I started my career, I came across a number of challenges, and I would just write stories on the side. So I always had this as a platform for making sense of the world. But then there was a point of a big transition to me, for me, whenever I left East Africa and I started considering whether I should move ahead and embrace a whole new life in back in the global north, or how I would actually play it out. Because for me, this attachment that I have to the continent is very strong and I want to make my contribution. However, many times I came across challenges that made me feel like, actually, will I be recognized, or will I ever get to the desired outcome? And you know, sometimes we set the bar really high, because I look back and I'm thinking, yes, the coding school was amazing and the nonprofit, but I also wanted to push the needle much further when it comes to policy advisory and so on and so forth. And I must say, as a change maker, we have to deal sometimes with this learning how to be patient and to see the global picture, the bigger picture. Yeah. And so whenever I set on, those learnings, I said to myself, okay, well, for me, the thread of my career, which has been dense and rich already, and sometimes a bit intense, has been showing up in integrity. And so I wanted to share these lessons. Eventually, with time and re-exploring those situations and editing the book with the help of my publishing house, I kind of realized in many instances, I had been the minority of minorities. I was the other in decision-making rooms. And so for me, it was about kind of delivering the wisdom and the lessons learned and the tools as well, because the book has many, many chapters, seven chapters with many exercises that people that do women empowerment programs or youth empowerment programs or startup acceleration programs can use, or even personal development. So I came up with those exercises that I sometimes use now in workshops. And my hope is that I will instill strategy into those younger generations, targeting particularly Black, Indigenous, and women of color. And by woke, I mean not just women in Africa or in the global south, but also minority women in the global north, because most of the time they face many challenges that are very similar to what we face as youth in Africa.
Wow, great. So on our screen, you can see the book. Go have a bite of the book on Amazon, and it's on different platforms. So you can get the paperback. You can get the audio. There's an audio book. There's a Kindle edition. And the question is, do you ever feel that despite your skill and hard work, you are overlooked because of your gender, race, ethnicity, religion, or nationality? Do you feel a need to dim your shine just to fit in? But what if being othered could be your strength? What if embedded in your experience of adversity is a new kind of leadership that challenges, inspires, and empowers you? I want you to go and get this book, because even the description alone is inspirational. It gives you a purpose. It gives you hope. It gives you that need to be able to do more. And that is the author we're talking about. Author of the century. Congrats on this achievement.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes. You like putting all the pieces together, you've done a lot of good works. You've done a lot of outreaches. You've done a lot of trainings, collaborations, and even testament to what we are talking about is that today you are in Dubai just to attend COP28. Not only for you, but for the people that you represent. Has there been any moment that you've gone through, you've seen someone, a young lady and or a young man whose story truly inspires you and feel like, wow, this story is inspirational?
Well, I'll tell you what, because of this approach that I have to understanding humanity, I always have a chance to go a little bit deeper in my conversations. And whenever I can, I will get into those conversations. If anyone asks me, will you be my mentor? I want to chat about this or that. I have so many of those opportunities, including at EWN. I remember having a chat with a young lady who was just out of university, who was kind of like seeking where she needs to go and so on. And sometimes, you know, even a 5-minute conversation can be deep and can go a long way because you can actually reflect something that the person is not seeing about themselves or that no one else is telling them, you know. And for me, I think my role and the way I perceive myself is that I want to, with the inner work that I've been doing and that I explain in the book, I want to be able to spark that in other people. And just if I manage to help them connect with their inner power, I feel I will have fulfilled my purpose. And that comes at times also with connecting with other people, because it's not just about, okay, my sole purpose, or I kind of realize that I'm there to do something and be more, seek a place of expansion, but also I'm someone who's quite practical and also entrepreneurial. And so with the many people that I meet, my purpose is also to make sure that I channel resources whenever they need to be channeled. And so even through the book, I talk about this venture that I'm working to develop to make sure that Black, Indigenous, and women of color that have ideas in the space of tech, climate tech in particular, education, and health can have access to a holistic transformational creative leadership program and be accelerated and have access to funding. Because let's be honest, money does rule the world, and we cannot just sit there and fantasize about our ideas, but we also don't have to wait for money to act. The idea is to bring that together in the most relevant manner so that we empower communities and we help them solve their challenges.
Wow, this is huge and this is great. As a female entrepreneur who has ventured into tech and you have the passion for youth development, maybe can you highlight some of the challenges you've gone through and I know that these are challenges that almost all the young people in Africa will be faced when they want to climb to where you are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I started my career in Europe, one of the things that I eventually understood with time is that as much as you've studied in the best possible schools, you've been top class and so on, there are a number of attributes that, your gender, your age, that can go against you and those perceptions that were sometimes really hard. So I would, definitely be the only young woman in the room many times when it comes to decision-making rooms and work really, really hard and do excellent work and not be paid accordingly. There's a lot more that can go into it. Sometimes it becomes a little bit toxic. There's this toxic masculinity that can play out in the space of tech. That can be really hard. But then eventually, even as an entrepreneur, when I moved back to Morocco and then I would bring these beautiful projects, some people would be clapping, some other people would be, oh, this is, they would look down on you because of your age and because of your gender. or question your ability to lead and so on. And so it's always been infuriating, to be honest, because then I was feeling like the value of what I'm offering was not properly perceived. And there was a lack of maturity on the other end. And in addition to other, you know, structural shortcomings, you do see, you know, like you go and try to get authorizations, there are delays, people are trying to get bribery, and then you push back, and it can be really, really hard, and not just for women, for sure, but I think it's definitely harder on women, because at the same time, what you have is societal expectations and everyone else telling you, well, when do you get married? When do you have do you become a mother and so on? And then eventually, even when you mature and then you have those desires and it, you know, but I was typically approached for role of a CEO by a European venture capital platform that, you know, organizes and invests in the global south, very active in Africa. And I was approached by the founder. However, whenever I spoke with his team members, one of his team members, a 50-year-old white guy, who told me, well, you're young, you're a woman, and who knows what life will throw at you in the next few years, as in, if you become a mother, I don't see you in this role of a CEO. And this is also infuriating, as a matter of fact, because you feel like, whatever good work you put out, you're always going to be challenged by ridiculous ideas of leadership and outdated ideas of leadership. And so I think for me, the messages that I share is continuously show up, because at the end of the day, maybe this opportunity wasn't for me, but it was an opportunity for them to understand where they were at and for me to kind of move ahead. And it's also a matter of constantly making sure that you come from a place of high inspiration and true love for humanity and for progress, rather than, you know, the opposite and being so triggered that you become a little bit bitter and you dim your light. That's not the point. And so I feel like, yes, those challenges at times felt unnecessary for me, because I would have loved to go a lot deeper, do a lot more. But then again, I'm only 34. Life is long, and I'm really excited about what's coming next. And I also want to make sure that I get into a sort of ripple effect with the book and what I'm the platform that the book is and the book tour is, into sharing those ideas and activating people and sharing tools so that they are also agents of change that collaborate and help one another.
Wow. Then the next question, that was inspirational, to be frank, and there were insights for me, and that triggered me to show you this. That is what I do. I'm a public speaking coach, and I have books, but on my days that I'm not busy, I feel like this is my charity project. So I organize young girls, volunteers from graduates from universities, and we go, we show them technology, new technology, rural communities that don't have technologies. And in one of the sessions that we did, I just team is InnoHub on wheels, because they don't have electricity, they've never seen a laptop, they've never seen some of the... We finished a session, and a young lady came to me, and she asked me, like a young lady, and that was one of the questions that I feel like I didn't answer that enough. I still owe her that answer anytime I get the opportunity to meet her. After finishing the session, she came to me, someone who could not even speak English very well, but she put one or two words together and said, sir, thank you very much for coming to our school to train us. This was like 8 or 9 years old. And she said, is there hope for me as a young lady growing up? It's like, it touched me. And I feel like partially in tears. He said, is there hope for me? So I stood back, and I feel like her age and the question she asked. So I asked her, oh, why do you think there's no hope? I said, yes. At first, I said, yes, there's hope. And I asked her, why? And she said the way she has seen her sisters being treated. Some of them have finished school. They want to further their education, but they are forced into marriage and stuff. Mm. I felt ashamed for like on some of the things that she said in terms of how community treats some of the young ladies. Mm. And coming back to her question, that is there hope for young women in Africa?
It's it really brings tears to my eyes when I hear that, because I find that it's so unacceptable that we build societies and narratives that would make a 9-year-old question whether there is hope for them in the world. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, it also reminds me of a time where I was in the Atlas Mountains with a group and we stayed with a family, and they had many kids, and none of the girls were going to school. And it wasn't a group of, civil society. We were doing a hiking tour. But then I obviously took the opportunity to chat with the girls and ask them about what they are up to and sing with them. And they all said that they loved school very much, and they were super sad to not be allowed to go to school anymore. However, they didn't want to question what their parents decided. And then, you know what happened in this instance? A man was part of the group who's in his 40s, affluent, from Casablanca, came and asked the girls, and in what maybe he thought was a joke, but definitely in my perspective was not funny, he said, "Who among you wants to get married?" And I was so upset. Like, there were generations of women in myself, my blood was boiling, because I was so mad that he would bring this as, you know, constraining them into only dreaming and hoping for maybe being, saved by a man and eventually serving this man for the rest of their lives. Because that's how he would, you know, that's how marriage is framed sometimes. I think we all have a responsibility, and I commend you for your work. Because we all have a responsibility to tell them, it's not that there is just hope for them, it's that they are the hope for the world. And yes, they need to be exposed to innovation, technology, quality education, have a sense of whatever comes my way, I will achieve, because they have so much strength in them and they have a purpose. And for me, it's not okay that we even maintain this possibility that their only purpose would be marriage. Marriage can be wonderful, and by all means, I wish for everyone to have love and satisfaction in that aspect, in that area. And maybe some people are not even wired to work full time, and that's completely okay. However, it needs to be coming from a place of empowerment. And this is why, let's talk about also ending child marriage in Africa. You know, it also happens in Morocco. And I think we need to name it the way it is for a woman who's a girl who's still a child to be married. It's like an institutionalized rape, and we cannot accept that. So for me, I think we need to invest a lot more into education, make sure that also what we say in this in the curriculum is empowering for both girls and boys, and so that they have tools to understand how they want to shape their lives, what role they want to play in a world that is changing, that is moving, that has a lot of challenges, but definitely not feel cornered and have to beg for hope. I was in South Africa, and because we're talking about hope, I think this reminds me of this beautiful tagline and motto for this community project called Air Labs, where I gave a book talk just over a week ago, and their motto is "Make hope contagious." And so I hope that this young girl, having heard you, having had this validation and permission from you to dream bigger for herself, is going to do the same for other people. I do believe it is a responsibility. I do believe that it needs to be brought into the table of every decision maker, even if it's, you know, even corporate decision makers, and if this, it's not their bottom line, how can they contribute to this? How? And I'm thinking banks, and I'm thinking energy companies, because this, sometimes their infrastructure is exactly where there is a potentiality to share knowledge and wisdom, and empower also community leaders so that they diffuse the right ideas. And by the right ideas, I mean the ideas that will make them feel empowered and not reduce them and be manipulated by whomever wants to take advantage of them.
Wow. This is powerful. And I just want to commend you for all the great things that you do. But maybe let's look at this also. You've done all these great works. You are an inspiration. And I know that just someone reading your profile, seeing all the good things that you do, you may not even know the person or even give the person a dime, but just because of the things that you've done, how you push yourself, how you refuse to give up, is going to be a great inspiration for someone to say, I will also do it. And I can also do it, because she or he is not doing it from a place of maybe hope, but she's doing it because there is evidence that Hanai, she's done that, and I can also do it. So what do you have after COP28? What is the future? What is the vision like, the big picture for Hanai?
Okay, well, I think, yeah, COP is going to be a very intense moment. I'm really excited. You know, my WhatsApp is full of those messages from so many groups. I'm speaking at many panels and sharing my book. There is a continuation to the book talk, so hopefully I will be actually bringing it to other places around the globe, potentially India and some other places in Asia and more in Africa. So definitely it's only the start for being other. And for me, it's really important. It's really important maybe even to, you know, I had worked on a creative leadership program. I maybe want to derive that. And then there's a number of other engagements. I'm going to Davos in January. I'm co-creating a festival with the House of Beautiful Business, bringing it for the first time in Africa. It's called Between the Two of Us, and it's going to happen between Tangier and the first weekend of May 2024 and Arrabida in Portugal. And so I'm the co-creator of this festival. I hope anyone who can joins, because it's going to be a fantastic fountain of inspiration and beautiful experiences. And then, yes, absolutely, we'll continue my work with the Sovereign Nature Initiative. As a matter of fact, we're expecting maybe to have a lot more possibilities and projects, because I've been applying to a number of grants and knocking at so many doors and creating so many synergies. So I hope to see the fruition of that. But yes, I do believe that over time, I'll be able to shape more of that venture around empowering Black, Indigenous, and women of color with a creative leadership program, with an acceleration program, and with access to funding. And if you ask me, as an author, I have many ideas for many books. So watch out for maybe a few more in the coming years.
Wow. Thank you very much. And I believe that inshallah I'll be in that conference when the time is due. And also maybe in the near future, we can do a book tour in Ghana or Africa, whereby you go to universities and you just impact your wisdom to them. I just want to thank you, especially thank you, because you just landed in Dubai. And I know things may not be like as you expect, because you need to book a hotel, you need to do all those things, and you need to just get familiar. There are a lot of people who you want to meet at COP28, but you gave us this time just to talk to us for 1 hour. I appreciate that. And I believe that we'll get to do more. Maybe after COP28, we'll still do one or two. And maybe some of the live events that you have, we will get the opportunity to be part and also bring you to some of the great things that we do in Ghana, some of the events that we plan to organize in Ghana. Capping all this all out, inshallah. So looking at all these things that are happening, looking at that young girl who asked about the hope which you talked about, and you said they are the hope. Looking at that young boy, looking at that graduate who has graduated from school, she's gotten her first degree, and she wants a place in terms of a job, in terms of career, and no hope. She's gone back to do master's, second degree, and still she's waiting and she's listening. I want you to inspire in your closing words to inspire that young woman, young man, young anybody from Africa or any part of the world that yes, they can do it. This is your final moment. Let's go.
Absolutely. Well, I want to tell them, first of all, yes, get educated, but don't just count on what you're learning at school because you have a lot more to bring. So unleash your ideas, go seek, you know, mentors, go seek knowledge elsewhere, develop new ideas, be active in communities. I think for me, what worked out really well and still is working and what drives me and powers me up is the fact that I belong into so many communities that uplift me and people share opportunities. And then even if at times, you know, if you feel like, oh, this role is not for me or I'm being constrained, you're learning. When you're 15, 20, 25, and 30, you're learning until you get to that flow. And I wish for everyone to get to that flow. And I promise this flow is possible within your lifetime. But it's only if you're showing up every day. So don't discard the fact that, you know, don't discard university and because you feel it's a little bit outdated. It's always something. However, don't put your eggs in the same basket. Maybe you can get some online trainings. Maybe you can seek somewhere else. And then whenever you have an idea, share it with people that can actually challenge it in a generative and productive way so that you refine it for a business and surround yourself with the right people. It's such a short lifetime. We have so much magic to bring. So we need the right magic co-creators. Don't be afraid to ask for the magic co-creators. Pray for them if you want, in your sleep, in your dreams, when you go to church or however else you want to do it. But believe that it's possible for you, that they will show up, and then go ask and seek. Because online, sometimes, you know, whenever I started a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I was writing articles about the scenes that I was looking at from Paris. And I had a job that was so demanding and sometimes really tiring. But I would tweet to people. People would answer. I would interview them from 600 thousands of kilometers away. And that started validating me and my capacity to network effectively. And then here I am now, constantly invited to high quality events and networking opportunities because I kind of like developed that possibility. Now people want to have me at their event, and you can be that person if you want to be. Just show up.
Show up. Thank you very much. Just show up. No matter what, just show up. So if they are listening to you, what are your handles? Where and how can they get you? The books and all the great things that you do.
Absolutely. So the book is available through Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and so on, and a number of bookstores as well. I mean, definitely the bigger ones in Europe and America, and the English-speaking ones in Africa. And if you don't find it in your bookstore, please don't hesitate in actually asking the publisher, because they can get them into the network of and share the books there. I'm available on LinkedIn. I'm available on Instagram. You can find my email in my website, www.behane.org, B-E-H-A-N-E. It's a Chinese name given to me by a Chinese professor when I took a Chinese 101 in university. But definitely reach out if you have an idea and so on. And if you have a chance to participate in any of the events that I take part in, please reach out. I'd love to chat. Be on the lookout for what Being Other will be doing and the platform that is coming up.
Wow, she's our voice at COP28, and she's going to represent all of us very well. There are a lot of leaders, there are a lot of young people, and she is going to actually represent us with passion, with vigor, of confidence, and all that. And you can invite her for your speaking engagements too. If you have a seminar, if you have a big conference that you have, bring her. anywhere. She was in Ghana.
Thank you.
Just to attend the EWM Network Conference. So thank you very much. This is the I Am Talkcast, and where we bring you inspiration. We bring you people who will give you hope, who are the hope, and who will let you know that, yes, you are not alone. It's possible. So I think this is the end of it, and we'll still talk on backstage. So thank you very much for coming.